This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. You're on KLZ 560, 100.7 FM and 95.3 FM. So welcome wherever you are listening from on your radio dial. Today it is legal day with our good friend Kevin Flesch. So any legal question we will take on today, you can give us a call, 303-477-5600. And with that, I will welcome our guest of honor, Mr. Kevin Flesch. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Scott. KLZ is just all over the dial these
days. I'm telling you, hey, you can just hit... You know, seek,
yep.
And you're going to pick us up every
bottom.
Once in a while.
It's got it bracketed.
Absolutely. So
can't miss us.
Glad to have those FM stations with us, too. And also 1220 AM and legal
when
day.
Listening, of course.
Again, with Kevin Flesch. So, again, if you got any kind of legal questions, and boy, I tell you, no matter where I go, things come up when, you know, they hear about the show and the legal things. And a lot of times you just don't know who to ask. And Kevin has a vast experience in a lot of different areas. So we will do our best to help you. And if we don't know the answer, we will try our best to get you someone that can. But probably we can help you. So 303-477-5600. Kevin, I thought I'd start out today's show with just maybe a legal tip in any area of your law, whether it be criminal, personal injury, whatever. Just what's a good legal tip if you say, man, here's why I want to give this because I'm seeing this a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last couple of days I've been talking to a woman that got into a car accident the beginning of the week. She lives in New Mexico. She just went out and bought a new used vehicle, or new to her, but used vehicle.
Right.
And it was really a $1,500 vehicle. So she put liability only on the vehicle. And she drove up here to see some family, and in the midst of that, she got rear-ended and totaled that vehicle. Completely not her fault. But the person that hit her said they had insurance. The police came out. She got the insurance information, and she thought she was good to go. She was going to go get some medical treatment and get her car fixed. Well, this morning she calls me, and she says, oh, well, it turned out that this woman that said she had insurance, that it had lapsed, that she had, you know, a regular auto pay, and then it somehow electronically didn't take the money, and the insurance company lapsed her, and so she didn't have coverage at the time of the accident. I said, okay, well, not a big deal. Let's talk about your insurance coverages, and asked her about, you know, I know you said that you had liability. Do you have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage? Because that, we talk about it, seems like monthly we cover this. But again, it's so important for our listeners out there. You want to make sure that you have underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage for this specific instance, where a person may, by mistake, thought sure. they had insurance, and they don't. And then you can make a claim against your own insurance company for that uninsured motorist when they've caused you damage. Well, in this particular case, she didn't have any. I said, well, were you living with anyone? No. Okay, well, because sometimes if you're living with someone, a family member, you can use their underinsured, mm-hmm. uninsured motorist coverage. So that didn't work. I said, do you have any other vehicles? Yes, I have another vehicle with my daughter. All right, well, check that. Again, she didn't have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. So my tip today is to check your insurance. I always get people that tell me I have full coverage. And not everybody understands what that means. Full coverage a lot of times means you have liability coverage, you have coverage for collision, you have coverage for maybe windshield or other things. But you don't have underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. And it's a specific coverage that you need to have, and that if you're going on the internet, you want to make sure it's UM/UIM coverage. And you want to buy as much as you can,
mm-hmm.
Because that's for you when somebody hits you. So that's my tip for the day, because in this case, this woman now is going to have to sue this person who clearly can't even make her insurance payments.
Right.
And it's going to be much more difficult for her to get her vehicle taken care of, and then also potentially her personal injuries. So make sure you have those limits, because they're so important.
Wow.
And it just makes you easier when you get into a situation where it's clearly not your fault and you got to go after somebody.
And I mean, originally, early on, you know, we looked at our things when we started doing the show, and we had $5,000. I'm like, okay, dude, I learned very quickly a couple of years ago, that goes very quick.
It does.
So now we're at $25,000.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people, if you have bodily injury limits of 100, 300. And what that means is 100 per person and 300 aggregate for an accident. So you hit somebody and you cause a significant amount of damage, the most that they can pay, the insurance company will pay in an accident for all of the occupants of a vehicle would be 300. 1,000 aggregate, even if you have 17 people in a vehicle. It's
oh, so you're driving a van or something and got people.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that you have to consider. For example, my family, we have five people in the family. I mean, if you have 100,000 for each person, but you only have an aggregate of 300, somebody may be shortchanged in the event that something happens. Those same sort of bodily injury limits you can get for underinsured, uninsured motorist limits. And I think Colorado, the maximum is 250 per person.
Right.
So definitely, whatever you can afford. It's inexpensive coverage, too.
Yeah.
And it just helps you in those times where, I mean, you don't think you're ever going to need it. But when you do, it's a really nice benefit to have. And it certainly makes my job as an attorney representing you in that situation a lot easier.
Right. How does that work then? Like, let's say, you know, people in churches and all that, they got vans and they're picking up kids maybe for different things. I mean, groups should look at their policies too.
They absolutely should. And you know, I've represented some folks relating to those entities, and you'll be getting a commercial policy that has additional riders relating to that and additional limits, aggregate limits for those commercial policies.
Mm-hmm.
So any I'm sure, again, our listeners that are out there, if you're on a church council or you're involved with some sort of nonprofit organization that is transporting people, you're going to want to have a real discussion, and hopefully you've already had those discussions with your insurance agent relating to any limits for underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage and just bodily injury limits so that you cover those individuals in case something happens.
Right.
And the other thing that people need to recognize is that as long as you have it individually or in your household, you can have multiple policies with multiple underinsured, uninsured motorist limits, and those policies, generally speaking, stack. So if you have three different policies and they have $100,000 limits for underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage, you may have $300,000 of limits when you stack, because they're not sort of concurrent limits, they're consecutive limits.
Right.
So,
do you recommend anything different when you're adding a teen driver for the very you know, your first one, they're getting their license. I mean, of course, they're excited. They want to drive everywhere. But, and I don't know the statistic for kids getting into wrecks for the first year, but I'm going to assume it's pretty high.
Yeah. I'm actually living it right now with a driver that doesn't have, she just got her permit. She just ran over a neighbor's mailbox. So that was pretty easy to fix. But yeah, so, you know, a lot of times the insurance contracts will cover the driver, a minor driver, so a 15-year-old, before they get their regular license on your current policies without any additional amount that you have to pay for premium.
Okay.
But once they get their driver's license, then you have to add them on. And I would suggest that you make sure that you have lower deductibles and as high limits as you can afford, just in case that child does something silly in your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time, you know, they'll eventually phase themselves out and hopefully not be as dangerous. But yeah, I would agree. You've got to look at that when you've got a young driver in your household, because unfortunately, a 16-year-old, the parents are going to be responsible for the actions of that 16-year-old.
Sure.
It just is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Highly recommend not the new Audi.
Yes.
For the 16-year-old.
No, definitely not. Not anything with a high degree of horsepower.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been advocating for a manual transmission, and I have one in our stable of vehicles. And Mackenzie, quite frankly, is quite scared. Even she can barely drive the automatic, let alone have to shift. But I think that would slow her down a little bit
in
how she approaches things.
So. No kidding. 303-806-8886 is Kevin's number, and I always recommend every show Kevin's with us, put that in your phone. In your time of need, you don't want to be trying to remember Kevin's name or the phone number and all that. Just put it in your phone. 303-806-8886 is website, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about really our court system in Colorado. You know, we always hear of different courts and, you know, county court, a municipal court, a district court, a federal court, and what happens in each of those and how do you end up there? You know, what about small claims court? We hear a lot about that. So that's going to be our topic today. But again, if you've got any legal questions, we will take it on at 303-477-5600. It's legal day here on Haystack Help. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
2019 is here, and rates are still in the low fours. Denver's housing market is continuing to increase in value, with over 35,000 more families moving in than out annually. The feds continue to raise short-term rates, like auto loans, credit cards, but many of our clients are paying off their credit cards before rates increase again. Others are doing much-needed home improvements, like new carpet, kitchens, finishing basements, etc. And then some are just putting money away for that rainy day. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Have you heard? There are loans specifically available for those self-employed or those without W-2s. You now have options. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Your locally owned and trusted mortgage broker since 2001, where we specialize in you, the customer. 720-895-0500. That's 720-895-0500. Affordable Interest Mortgage. And MLS 298191, regulated by DORA, Equal Credit Lender.
Let me tell you about one of my favorite stores, The Outdoorsman's Attic, a consignment store for all of your adventure outdoor gear. Hunting, fishing, camping, kayaks, live bait, survival gear, backpacks, sleeping bags, firearms, and ammo. Save 20, 30, 40, and even 50% on new and pre-owned items at The Outdoorsman's Attic. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and save up to 20% on your purchase. This offer excludes firearms and ammo. Never pay retail again. Big savings and friendly service is what you'll find at The Outdoorsman's Attic. Located at 2650 West Hamden Avenue in Sheridan. 303-781-3626. That's 303-781-3626. Check them out, outdoorsmansattic.com.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
Rejuvenate your retirement with David Cishon of Cishon Financial. Attend a two-hour course on retirement planning Thursday, January 31st from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at Arapahoe Community College in Parker. Learn how to maximize your tax efficiency, plan ahead for health care, long-term care, and retirement income, how to identify threats to your retirement savings, and learn everything you need to know about Social Security. All packed into one two-hour session with David Cishon. Thursday, February 31st from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at the Parker campus of Arapahoe Community College. Call now to register, 303-797-5722. That's 303-797-5722. Don't miss this chance to meet David Cishon in person. Certified estate planner, regional vice president of householder group, and a registered representative with LPL Financial.
Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. It is Legal Day. If you're just joining us with Kevin Flesh, again, our number 303-477-5600. We will take your legal questions. So, Kevin, let's kind of do an overview, really, of, I guess, what we would term our judicial branches here in Colorado. You know, criminal cases, and, you know, we hear a lot of all different charges, you know, of different things and different classes of misdemeanors, all those different things. But let's kind of talk about the courts starting out here a little bit. And then, you know, I guess we can start out like in criminal court.
Yeah. So I get calls all the time. For example, people call me and talk to me about DUI cases. And there's a little bit of confusion about is a DUI now, because there's been so much press over the last couple of years about the felony DUI. And people on a first offense get a DUI and they're like, panicking because they think that now all DUIs are felonies, and they're not. Essentially, there are really four different types of criminal courts in Colorado. The first of which, the ones that are the most minor, generally speaking, are the courts, well, most minor in the sense of what could happen to you.
Right.
They're all serious, but the first would be municipal courts, and those are the courts, you know, Denver has one, Lakewood, Aurora, all of the municipalities, Centennial, all of them have these courts that have jurisdiction relating to, generally speaking, misdemeanor charges, either petty offenses, traffic offenses, or misdemeanors. And they're limited, they're what is called courts of limited jurisdiction. So they can basically fine you on a criminal conviction, they can fine you up to $1,000 and potentially put you in jail up to a 1 year in jail. That generally doesn't happen, but that's their limitation on the sentence they could give you relating to fine and then the loss of your mm-hmm. liberty. And where you normally see those sorts of cases, we see a lot of shoplifting cases, domestic violence cases, assault cases there, some other sort of just basic assault cases, and then public intoxication, those sorts of minor criminal offenses. Right. Especially where people don't have a whole lot of criminal history. But the scary thing about those courts is you never know what the judges are going to do on a particular day relating to a particular sentence. And I get some of the strangest sentences out of those courts than I would say any of the other three. Hmm. Just because there isn't as much real guidelines, or you've got different judges that have different opinions about what their city councils have told them in the way of what they'd like to see in the way of sentences.
Right.
So those cases, while minor, can be a big deal, especially if you've got somebody that has a significant criminal history, maybe a couple of felonies or something like that in their past, where they get this municipal charge that looks like it shouldn't be really a whole lot of anything, and a judge sentences them to 6 months in jail. Then it's a big deal. So, but generally speaking, pretty minor sorts of tickets and that sort of thing. All right. So then the next level, I would say, that you see cases at would be the county court levels. And all of the counties have their own county court. And generally speaking, county courts deal with DUIs, domestic violence, the assaults again, and more significant misdemeanor cases. As well, felony cases will start out many times in the county court and work their way up through the district court. But the county courts, again, generally speaking, in an extraordinary risk misdemeanor case, they can sentence you up to 2 years in the county jail. There's a high degree, I think it's up maybe up to $100,000 now relating to fine. But really, again, it's a limited jurisdiction court, but could be probation up to 2 years. Some fines, that sort of thing, county jail, so you'd be within the same county that the courthouse is in, and generally where people live, so that same courthouse. And those cases are high, right? Those are high volume. The county court has just a lot of cases. You do see some driving under restraint cases there as well, and some more significant traffic tickets. Mm-hmm. So those are, generally speaking, high volume, fast resolution, a little bit more uniform sentencing, and a little bit more, because we do a lot of work in those counties, we have a better sense of what the sentences are going to be, and we'll be able to explain to people right. what it's going to end up. And the majority of the judges are there a long period of time, and so you get a history with the judge, and you know what they are concerned about and what they aren't concerned about
right.
In the way of sentencing. And so those are what I would consider the areas where the district attorney's office a lot of times have their younger associate district attorneys in those offices, so younger lawyers, and it's really a place a lot of times from the lawyer's perspective where a lot of young lawyers get a lot of work in the way of jury trials and things like that. So you may end up getting those situations where if it's a case that somebody wants to make a name for themselves, you'll get some strange offers of settlement in a criminal case that you don't think are quite appropriate for what actually happened mm-hmm. because it may be one of those cases that they're going to try. So it's sometimes those sorts of things, you get some odd outcomes in the sense of people wanting to try some cases to see if they've got an idea of what the jury panels and the jury pool are right. willing to do or not.
And once a judge rules on something like that and gives you a verdict that you don't think was quite fair, I mean, what are your options then of going back?
Right. So county court, you appeal. You appeal to the district court, which is the basically the district court in Colorado is the general, the court of general jurisdictions for all matters within the state, and each county has a district court. And so, and they're set up into districts. So like the 18th Judicial District is Arapahoe, Douglas, and Elbert County. And then actually there's one other county that way out on the eastern plains that's involved in that district that we don't see a whole lot of work from. But that's an example of a district where the district court. So county court, you get a ruling or a verdict that you don't think is correct legally. You can appeal then to the district court. And in that appeal, the district court will then review the entire record. So everything's transcribed. You have a full record of what's going on. And the district court will review it, what's called de novo. It means that it gets to look at the whole thing to determine whether it's appropriate or not. And when it does that, then it gives you a ruling relating to that. And that appeal ruling will be in the form of a judgment. If the district court affirms the county court action, in other words, says it's, it finds that it's reasonable and that it doesn't want to disturb any of the findings or the conclusions of law and the final judgment, then it affirms it. Then you can appeal that decision, if you want, to the Colorado Supreme Court. All right. So that's your last avenue really within the state system to appeal a verdict in the county court is the Colorado Supreme Court. Now, you can always appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, but both the Colorado Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court only take the cases that they really want.
Right.
It's called writ of cert. And if they accept your writ of cert, then they will take the case and hear it to make rulings. You know, in Colorado, I think about 20% of the cases that are actually sent up to the Colorado Supreme Court actually get heard by that court. They'll normally deny cert, and they'll deny the opportunity to be heard on those matters. So from county court to district court, that district court is really the court of appeals for that, for those matters, and that's really where a lot of the substantial amount of work is done if you think you've got an appealable issue.
Right. So you mentioned a fine, $100,000.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there, you got a client beside you, and all of a sudden, you know, you get slapped with a $100,000 fine. And you know that guy or lady can't pay.
Yeah.
Do they end up paying that $100,000, or how does that work?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've never had a client that had a $100,000 fine. Where it would happen is where the court believes the person does have the assets and they're trying to punish them in an economic fashion. But just talking about fines and court costs in general, yes, they do pay them whatever the court generally. It's not very often that the court waives those fines and costs unless they put them in jail for a period of time.
Okay, you can't pay
that happens.
$5,000.
Yep.
You're going to go to jail for
yeah,
something.
I mean, you know, we have a system of justice set up that it's we don't run into. That's really a debtor's prison. I mean, you've heard that term.
Sure.
And you normally hear that in the civil cases where someone can't get a civil judgment against you and then attempt to get you in a position where if you don't pay, you go to jail. Criminal's a little bit different than that. I mean, it can come up that they have the ability. And I have had cases where the court said, well, you know, we've given you a year to pay this $1,000, and you haven't been willing to do it or been able to do it. You have an option. We can do a work release sentence. We can put you in jail, and you can work it off by day, the amount that's owed. Or it will say sometimes we'll waive it all together, but you go to jail for a period of time, and once you're done with it, you're done with it. But the problem is now that where people and clients of mine sort of snicker after their sentencing is that there's so many costs and fees that the court has jurisdiction to fine you, let's say in a DUI. A lot of times in a first DUI in Colorado, there may be fines and costs of $1,100. And of that, the fine is maybe $100 or $150 that the court actually puts in place. The rest is alcohol assessment fee. That's close to $200. A bonding fee for you to do the useful public service. That's normally $75 or $100. They've got all kinds of courthouse fees, traumatic brain injury fund, victim witness funds. Jeez. There's all sorts of things that judges, in my experience, don't actually, in the sense of a DUI, for example, because all of the other costs are so high, the courts recognize that and say, well, I'm not going to fine you a whole lot because that doesn't really do any good because you've got all these costs that you've got to pay for anyway that are all these sort of special interests that get to tack on 5, 10, 15, 100, 100. I mean, you are convicted of, let's say, for a deferred judgment for a felony drug possession now in Colorado. It's a $3,000 drug offender surcharge that you have to pay to the state because of the conviction. So there's some real economic things, and that's not a fine. That's something that the legislature has said to the judiciary that they can assess for costs, basically, for monitoring the case and for drug problems in the state in general.
So it starts out municipal, then county, and then district.
Yep.
Sounds like it's getting more serious.
Yes. So the district court is the court where all of the felonies are dealt with. And felony cases are those cases where you could lose your liberty and go to the basically the state penitentiary. In Colorado, we call it the Department of Corrections. Right. And, you know, we all know where there's one in Denver. They're all over the state, a bunch down in Canyon City and out in the Eastern Plains. Sterling's got one. At any rate, those are state penitentiaries where you go to serve out your sentence if you're sentenced to a Department of Corrections sentence. And so those are not within, generally speaking, they're not within the county that you're sentenced, but you're transferred. When you're sentenced to the Department of Corrections, you become what's called a client of the Department of Corrections. You are sent to the Diagnostic Center in Denver, out on Smith Road. There's a diagnostic center there. You spend about 3 weeks there in essentially 23-hour lockdown, and they do an assessment of you to determine what level of monitoring you'll need while you're a DOC sent. You have this DOC.
So you want to be on your best behavior there.
You do. You also, definitely. There. And I've had a number of clients that say that's part of the worst part of the process. And because once you get out to a DOC facility, it's not as bad, especially when you're in maybe a low, not a medium security, but a low security facility. Right. It's actually more like a camp than a regular jail. And you have some more, you work your way through privileges and be able to do things and you fill your time. So they say that the worst is there because you don't have really anything to do while you're sitting there. But at any rate, so district court is who deals with all of the felony matters. And, you know, DUIs, for example, are county court for the most part, unless you get charged with a felony DUI, and then you're in district court. All of the others, felonies are ranked from 1 to 6. Class 1 felonies are the worst felonies possible. That's lifetime Department of Corrections sentence or death, all the way down to a Class 6. Class 6 is the most... The least amount of time that you'd end up spending in Department of Corrections. And then there's another set for felony drug possession charges. And again, those are separate sentencing. And those all have sentencing guidelines. So you'll know, for example, a Class 4 felony, just a regular Class 4 felony in Colorado, you know, you've got a sentence, maximum sentence of 8 years, unless there's a situation in which you were on felony probation at the time, which then could possibly double it. But generally speaking, the presumptive range is 2 to 8 years. So if you go to the Department of Corrections because of a felony conviction and you're sentenced under the guidelines, it has to be in that range, unless you have some other agreement with the prosecutor. So those are a little bit easier to diagnose because you know exactly what exactly the person could be looking at, depending upon their criminal history and depending upon what the charge is that they plead guilty to.
Right. And you've probably seen in some instances where people are so close to the end of a probation and then mess up when they have 30 days left.
Yes.
And that's
And, you know, we see that. We also see it where the person is on probation. Probation officer isn't real happy with the way that they've been handling their probation. And although they don't have any new law violations, for example, the probation officer will turn up the heat a little bit at the end and try to get the person in a position where they can violate their probation. So they maybe they can extend that probation, or maybe they think there should be some other sentencing options. Because once that probation, the final day of probation is over, the state loses jurisdiction over that person.
Right.
So if probation hasn't filed something before that last date, then they're out of luck that they can't revoke any probation.
Okay.
And so I do see that. I see that on a pretty regular basis where people... especially in sex offenses where you have a definite period of probation where maybe the offender hasn't completed all of their treatment and probation wants them to do some more and the person is resisting to some degree wanting to do any more treatment, that's when you really see that happen.
And what's your involvement with the probation? Do they call you sometimes and say, hey, just want you to know this client?
Normally not. Okay. They'll normally... but they'll be telling the client about it, and the client will get really concerned, and so I normally have that client show up in my office to talk to me about it, and then I try to intercede, see if I can do something with the probation officer rather than having a complaint filed. Because in the sense of a probation complaint, you're able to have a hearing about that, and whether it's county court or district court or municipal court, it's all the same standard in the sense that you think criminal cases, you always have to prove something beyond a reasonable doubt. and that's true related to the initial offense, whether or not you've done it or not. But in the case of a probation revocation, they only have to prove it by a preponderance, which if you always see the scales of justice, right?
Sure.
The preponderance of evidence is just tilting one side of the scale or not, even to the slightest degree. And so that's a much easier standard for them to prove. So a lot of times these probation revocation hearings, you lose them because the standard of proof is so much lower.
Right.
Yeah.
It is Legal Day with Kevin Flesh. Again, check out Kevin's website, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com, 303-806-8886 is his number. When we come back, last one left is federal court. Who goes there? What goes on? Also, when we come back, we're going to talk about small claims court and what that is really for and kind of some of the rules and guidelines for that as well. And then, you know, how criminal cases are started if we have time. You know, how the police are first, of course, can charge and the DA, grand jury, all of that and more. Again, we will take your legal questions, 303-477-5600. We'll be right back.
Stop enduring nerve pain. Call Dr. Dean Anderson, chiropractor at Front Range Medical Center, to find out whether electronic signaling could help your peripheral neuropathy. The burning, tingling sensation starts in your feet, slowly progressing until your balance begins to suffer. Occasional numbness turns into constant discomfort. You become afraid to drive because you can't feel the pedals. Do not resign yourself to a lifetime of limited mobility. For the past 9 years, Dr. Anderson has specialized exclusively in the treatment of peripheral neuropathy. Front Range Medical Center offers an advanced technology called electronic signaling, giving hope to seniors with nerve pain. Call 720-851-9694 to schedule a $27 consultation, including a neuropathy-specific exam. Dr. Anderson will review your health history and past medical records to find out whether electronic signaling could help your peripheral neuropathy. You shouldn't need to tolerate nerve pain. Call today, 720-851-9694.
You were just walking into that store when you were in a slip and fall accident as a result of the store owner's negligence. Flesh and Beck know what to do. First, make a report of the incident with the store owner. It's important to have an official document of all the important details. Second, make a note of all of your injuries so you can report them to your doctor as soon as you can. Third, take pictures of the conditions and location of the accident. And remember, it's your job to take care of yourself. Don't waste time arguing about who is at fault. Then, call Flesh and Beck.
Call me, Kevin Flesh, at Flesh Law to get a professional opinion. I will answer all your questions, and I will help you determine if you're entitled to compensation for your pain and suffering. If you've been injured in an accident, call me, Kevin Flesh, at 303-806-8886 for a free consultation to find out if we can help you get the compensation you deserve.
Why are seniors considering a reverse mortgage other than no mortgage payments? Hi, Steve Hurley here with Affordable Interest Mortgage at 720-895-0500. Other than no mortgage payments, another reason may be the access to equity that they did not previously have. Taking in monthly payments for life or a specified period of time, or simply having a line of credit available. Take aim at 720-895-0500 and ask for me, Steve Hurley, NMLS number 243200. Regulated by DORA, an equal opportunity lender.
Hi, this is Scott Watley. Now, many times you hear your radio host like me say something like, "Let me tell you about my friends at," then we'll talk about a sponsor that we truly believe in and endorse. Well, in this case, let me tell you about a company that really is part of my family, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center. For over 13 years, we have trusted our furry family members to this wonderful staff. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, they believe that all pets deserve to have a good life, and their goal is to help you keep your pets happy and healthy throughout their life by providing complete pet care services every day, all at one location. We love the Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center boarding lodge, and your pet will too. Your pet will receive one-on-one care and attention throughout their stay. Open 7 days a week for your convenience.
Check them out. Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, located at 8681 Lincoln Avenue in Lone Tree. 303-708-8050. 303-708-8050. Or check them out online at lonetreevet.com.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. It is Legal Day. If you're just joining us, my name is Scott Watley, along with Kevin Flesh. Now, look, we get some calls into the studio, and sometimes people are shy. Don't be shy. All right? It's just us.
It is just us.
Just Kevin and me and you talking. So, again, we would love your questions. And, you know, if you've got that question, it will probably help some other people. And no one really knows who you are. You can make up a name, whatever you want to do. But also, if you want Kevin to call you back after the show, leave your number with Charlie, and we will certainly get back to you today. Again, Kevin Flesh is our guest. FleshLawFirm.com is the website, and Kevin's number is 303-806-8886. Talking about our court system here in Colorado, and if you're just joining us again, we've talked about municipal court, county court, district court, and now federal. So now we're really serious.
Yeah, the federal, yeah. So we are sort of going from lowest concern to highest concern, and certainly the federal. You know, it's interesting because, again, the federal district court is a court for all matters within the state of Colorado and the federal system. What is interesting about the federal court is that I've had misdemeanors in federal court, DUIs, where you're on a federal facility and you get charged. So you're up in Rocky Mountain National Park, for example, and you're smoking marijuana at your campsite, and you think, well, I'm legal because I'm within the state of Colorado. You've forgotten that you're on a federal facility, and marijuana is not legal to possess on a federal facility. And they can charge you, and I've seen people charged with that, and then you end up in Denver on a federal in a federal case, which really can be a fine. I mean, it can be turn out to be that, but it also goes up to, I mean, the more significant drug cases are brought in federal court, the more significant tax evasion cases, all the things that guns and drugs, a lot of gun cases are brought in federal court, as well as the high profile crimes that you see relating to securities cases, and all of those sorts of things are in federal court. And the thing about federal court is that almost all of the charges, you're entitled to a jury trial. But the federal sentencing guidelines, in particular relating to felonies, are much harsher than they are in state court. And the other thing that's interesting is that the sentencing guidelines are much harsher, and you also spend about 75% of your time on those sentences. Whereas in state court, on a felony, for example, in state court, where you go to the Department of Corrections, you may do about 50% of that time. Federal, it's 75%, so it's a lot more. Yeah. And then they just have a lot more avenues for parole or probation. Their probation officers are more involved in your day in and day out life. And it's a more significant, a more something that people should be more concerned about when they get indicted, let's say federally. The other thing that I see, you know, in talking about sort of the level of sophistication as well, is the investigators, for example, in the economic crimes unit in Denver, are sophisticated individuals in determining what crimes should be prosecuted or not. At the federal level, it's even a higher level of folks at the FBI and the other agencies within the federal government. You sort of get the best folks that end up traveling to those sorts of agencies. And so their investigation is better, their likelihood of making any mistake is much lower, and they generally work up the cases much better, and have more time to do so and more resources. So those cases are more difficult to defend. Mm-hmm. And that's what you see a lot of times in the press relating to these cases, is the majority of them resolve. You very rarely see a federal case where the prosecution loses. It just doesn't happen very often.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you remember the Nacho case that happened, you know, a decade or so ago. And you think about the progression of how long that took. But the federal government eventually got the conviction that they had wanted relating to him, and he spent millions of dollars defending that.
Right.
So those cases are not a situation where you think you can go in yourself and represent yourself. It's definitely sophisticated litigation and the tactics that the, both the U.S. Attorney's Office and the folks that they have that represent the federal government, they just know what they're doing.
Right.
So those are sort of the main courts that you'd see criminal cases. Now, certainly there's implications as well relating to a criminal offense. For example, in DUIs, you've got some administrative levels of issues. So a person gets a DUI, and I had this question yesterday, which client had a really hard time with. He got charged with a DUI. The way that works is they give you a summons to appear. The police officer writes out a summons, and he serves you before he lets you go or sends you to detox or puts you in jail. And that summons, as well as if you take a breath or blood test, and it's a breath test generally with a police officer that's above 0.08, they'll also give you a form that's an express consent form that says that your license has now been revoked because you've blown over the legal limit, right? And so you get these two pieces of paper and you see a court date on one of them and you go, oh, okay, I got to deal with that. And many people forget that there's an administrative process relating to their driver's license and that with that administrative process, you have to request a hearing. And if you do that, then they'll have a hearing about whether or not the state did everything that it needed to do so that they could then prove that they can revoke your license, okay? And that's that administrative process is independent of the criminal case. So the example that I was just giving, the guy comes in, the summons that he was given by the police officer was defective, and the court dismissed it. So now he's coming into my office saying, well, I've got this DMV hearing, but my DUI was dismissed, so why should they be able to take my driver's license? And many people have a hard time understanding that they're independent processes, okay, that the administrative process still goes on. And I've had this happen numerous times where we win the administrative process, person gets to keep their driver's license, but then later on they're convicted of an offense that's alcohol or drug related.
Mm-hmm.
And so, or where we get the DUI dismissed, maybe you go to trial and a jury doesn't convict them, but they've still had their license taken and they still had to get an interlock device and that sort of thing. And so people need to understand when you get into these situations, we've talked about these four different sort of courts, but there's sometimes other administrative things. We also see it with licensing for nurses, for gaming licenses. Okay. Again, you get an alcohol-related offense or something related to moral torpitude, something that's calling into question your moral capacity. Your license relating to those other things may be at risk, and you have to, number one, put those agencies on notice that you've got the complaint or the criminal complaint pending. But when you get convicted, you also have an obligation to put them on notice because then there's some administrative remedies for those folks to determine what they want to do with your licensing. Same thing with lawyers.
Right.
We have that happen all the time. I was just representing a lawyer recently that got a DUI. We didn't have to do anything with regulation counsel for the Colorado Supreme Court until he was convicted of an alcohol-related offense. But as soon as he was, we had to put them on notice within 10 days of that conviction. So there's just a lot of, I'm always amazed at the amount of administrative law judges that are out there that handle things.
Right.
And then just the criminal portion, that the different types of courts that may affect your liberty and then also your economic situation.
And I would think another big tip we could give today is once you, you know, DUI, you get into legal trouble, they need to get to you.
Right away.
Now.
Yeah.
Delaying is never going to help anything and could hurt some areas if you do some talking that you shouldn't do and say some things that you just, but again, not trying to get you to be dishonest, whatever.
Never.
It's a deal of just, you've got rights, you need to understand those rights, and so the minute you get in trouble, call.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And if nothing else, I mean, I've had this happen too where I had it happen last week where the fellow came in, he had the public defender, he wasn't sure if he was getting a good deal, really wanted to talk about it. He had brought his discovery in. We reviewed it. And I said, well, I'm happy to help you with it, but I think you're going to pay me money and I'm going to end up with the same result.
Mm-hmm.
So you certainly can pay me to take the chance that we can do better, but I can't guarantee anything.
Right.
And the same thing with this DMV issue. The guy came in yesterday. He had his paperwork from DMV, and I kind of went through with him in a half hour what the DMV hearing officer was going to be looking for. And there are things that those hearing officers look. First, did they have reasonable suspicion to pull the person over? Once they had reasonable suspicion, did they have some sort of evidence that there was impairment? Bloodshot, watery eyes, smell of alcohol, you know, the driving was bad, weaving, those sorts of things. The person admits that they were drinking, you know, and at a traffic stop, never admit to to taking right. drugs or drinking alcohol. You can, if you don't want to say no, just say I'm not answering that question. I mean, that's certainly within your rights. At any rate, so, and then probable cause and all of this. So we went through all of this, and I said, well, listen, everything that I see here, because you didn't request that the officer be present, because that's one of your rights at one of those DMV hearings, is you check the box, I want the officer there, and then you get to question that officer. He hadn't done that. So I said, they're going to look at the same paperwork I'm going to look at. I can make a couple of arguments, but it's less than a 10% chance that I'm going to be able to get this overturned. You're going to lose your driver's license. Quote him a fee. I said, it's up to you. You're probably just as easily to go in yourself and see what the hearing officer did and save yourself some money. And I think that's what he's going to do, because right. I don't think, you know, if it were me, I wouldn't gamble with that money if it's a 10% mm-hmm. chance I'm gonna win.
Right.
Obviously, if you go in by yourself, you have almost 0% chance. Yeah. But I don't think the $500 that.
Yeah, I just don't want to go in there without.
Well, you know, and there are some people like that.
I mean, you know what? I'm just like, you know what? I would rather just have you
yep.
be my spokesman.
Right. And I was more than happy to do that yeah. too. But I'm not one that I'm going to promise somebody in my conference room to have them put down money.
Sure.
Where I don't think we talk about it, add value. I just wasn't comfortable with doing that. And that's the conversation we had, is I've had clients in the past, they say, I just want you there. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to do that. You're paying for my time. I get that.
Right.
But without having that disclosure.
Yeah.
I had another case last week where the fellow was going to pay us a bunch of money to work on his case on an hourly basis. And at the end of the day, I said, I think you're going to spend more on this case than it's worth. And he's now thinking about what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't mind doing it, but understand that that's where you're going to go. And at the end of the day, if you're standing there with nothing and you've paid me a bunch of money and I haven't gotten any results that I think you may be entitled to, but a jury hasn't found in your favor, how do you feel about it? And is it different than what you're feeling right now?
Sure.
You know, and that's a conversation I like to have up front, because if I can't meet the person's expectations, I'm going to have a client that's disappointed in the end. And I don't want, you know, the legal system is tough because mm-hmm. there are so many people that get involved in it in an emotional sense. They want justice. Sometimes justice just isn't there, because what they think justice is isn't what they really want.
Sure.
And sometimes it's legally it's not in your favor. Sometimes it's factually not in your favor. We can't prove something. We have a hunch that it's what we think, but there's no way of proving it.
Right.
And so that's why we have these initial consultations.
You're listening to Haystack Help Radio. It is Legal Day. We don't have time to get into several of the things we want to, Dave, and I just something crossed my mind, Kevin, I want to get your opinion on. You know, yeah. sometimes as parents, it's tough when our kids get in trouble. I want your opinion on what you see is sometimes we start out with every time Johnny gets in trouble, Johnny gets a little blame for a lot, but every
yes.
time Johnny gets in trouble, parents are right there writing checks, bailing them out.
Yes.
And then Johnny's 50 years old, and parents are right there writing him out.
Yes.
What do you see in that? What's your advice to parents? And we got to take a break.
Yes.
But just think about that. And then, you know, I mean, none of us want to see our kids in jail or get in trouble and all that. And there is a time to help. But I think also there's a time to step back and let them understand the consequences.
Agreed.
And take some responsibility. We'll be right back.
Ladies, I know you're tired of walking into the local gun store and seeing the same old thing. So let me tell you about Rampart Firearms. Just a quarter mile up Highway 67 off of Santa Fe and Sedalia, you will find a great selection of guns, ammo, tactical, and personal defense weapons. And if you or your spouse love to hunt, Rampart Firearms is a great stop for all of your hunting needs. Shotguns, rifles, pistols, anything from predator hunting to your next big game trip. Head to Rampart Firearms at the foot of the Rockies. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And you will only pay a 4% tax on your purchase. RampartFirearms.com, 720-468-0050. That's 720-468-0050.
Got a road trip planned for the holidays or getting ready for your next outdoor adventure? Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at D&D Tire Service. At D&D Tire Service in Parker and Aurora, they understand automotive issues can be a headache, and they never come at a convenient time. D&D Tire Service is family-owned and operated and is truly your one-stop shop for all of your automotive needs. All tires are reduced, and for a limited time, there are some great rebates saving you up to $200. From belts to tires, wiper blades, oil changes, D&D Tire Service has you covered. For the location nearest you, call 303-699-7337. That's 303-699-7337. D&D Tire Service is the official auto repair shop of Sportsman of Colorado Radio. Let D&D Tire Service keep you and your family safe on the roads. DNDTireService.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Trisna, owner of M4 Roofing and Gutters. Since 2004, it's been our mission to provide the highest quality of service and trust to every customer we serve. M4 Roofing and Gutters is a family-owned and operated company right here in Englewood, Colorado. At M4 Roofing and Gutters, quality customer service is our top priority. For a free inspection and estimate for your roofing project, call today 303-797-8600. That's 303-797-8600. Or visit us online at m4roofing.com. M4 Roofing and Gutters is an A-plus member of the Better Business Bureau and HaystackHelp.com.
Hi, this is Scott Whatley. Let me tell you what I love about Stack Optical. They are truly one of the last optician-owned, family-owned optical stores. At Stack Optical, you can be confident you'll receive personal attention. For over 50 years, Alan Stack has shown he really cares about making his customers happy. Stack Optical also has a beautiful new location at 2233 South Monaco Parkway in Denver. Free and easy up-close parking. Stack Optical has an on-site eyeglass production lab. Whether you need office eyewear or a new set of shooting or golf glasses, Stack Optical has the solution with the Stack Sport Pack. Give them a call today and ask for their $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. That's 303-321-1578. Your eyes and vision are one of the most important things in life. I'm confident at Stack Optical, you'll see the difference. That's 303-321-1578, stackoptical.com.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Legal Day here on Haystack Help Radio. My name is Scott Whatley along with Kevin Flesch. Kevin's number 303-806-8886. Again, we've got a lot of calls into studio today and people asking questions, and so give Kevin a call. It is a free consultation, whether by phone or in person, and he will do his best to help you out. So, Kevin, again, before the break, and boy, this is a touchy subject when you talk about telling people how to be a parent. You know, none of us like to hear that. But I think sometimes, and every situation is different, every child is different, so we'll get that out of the way.
Yes.
But what are just some things that you see, you know, kids get in trouble, whatever, parents right there to help them, you know, stroke a check for a thing. And then you kind of see that a cycle, and the kid sometimes may not even take things serious because they know mom or dad's going to be there to bail them out.
Yeah, and I've represented a number of juveniles over the last 20 years, and it's been interesting. And I think part of my involvement with these juvenile cases has changed over time as my kids have gotten older too. And so first of all, as a lawyer, no matter who's paying the check, whoever I'm representing, whatever client it is, I have to look out for their best interests.
Sure.
And so that means, number one, I need to have a relationship with that person. And so any juvenile that I represent, I meet with them personally. Sometimes I meet with the parents first, and I meet with them, with the juvenile together, and then I kick parents out, and then I have a conversation with the child, as long as they seem to be comfortable with me, and really talk with them about, listen, this is what's going on. Conversations you have with me are critical, and they're also completely protected by attorney-client privilege, and I get a sense of what really has gone on in the situation. I also ask, because remember, I'm a lawyer, but I'm also with an attorney and a counselor at law, sure. And that counselor portion comes up a lot, and what it is I'm trying to figure out what exactly is going on with the youth or the juvenile and determine what is in their best interest, because sometimes in representing a juvenile, it isn't always getting them out of the crime, right? Sometimes it's, okay, we want to work out the best disposition that we can for the child, but sometimes there should be consequences. And those are the sorts of conversations that I have with the juvenile and their parents sometimes, with what's going on at home, How is the home life? How are things at home? How are things going on? And then I also see the dynamics as to whether or not the parents are somewhat enablers. Because I've had cases where I've had to bring the parents in just by themselves and say, you're really enabling this juvenile to do things, and we need to have a discussion about that. Because I'm an advocate for the child to begin with, but I'm also an officer of the court, and I have some ethical duties to the child to really do what's in their best interest. And sometimes it's not what they want to do, but sometimes, because the court's going to do that too. The judges, it's so fun being in the same environment and the same judges over a period of time, because you get the sense of what they really, and a lot of judges have these things figured out, and they'll do what's best for that individual, especially after just asking a few questions and getting a pre-sentence report and that sort of thing. They've got a pretty good sense of what should be done. And so I try to get all of that work done before we get into a courtroom, so that it's real easy for a judge to say, listen, you know, Johnny, your lawyer and your parents have done you a real favor here, because they had you doing certain things along the way that have shown you that you are responsible for this. And so I don't have to do as much to punish you. And so that's the sort of representation. And it's certainly the case where I try to get parents to parent. And that's hard sometimes, mm-hmm. because sometimes I had a case 10 or 15 years ago where it was a very much a dysfunctional family structure, where dad was he was just an alcoholic and mom was an enabler. And the two twin children had 7 DUIs between the two of them. And you look at that situation, and they're now in their 50s, and you say, why couldn't we get this progression stopped? And those are the sorts of discussions that we had. Now, that I couldn't do anything about, because they were so entrenched in where they were at. But when I get the 14 or 15-year-old in and you start seeing that same sort of enabling, I have those conversations. And sometimes parents are like, no, they don't like that conversation.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then they don't retain me. But I like to have the conversation again up front, or as we're going through, to really help the situation, because I want to get them in and out of the judicial system as fast as possible, because they're still going to have these issues down the road, whether there's a criminal case or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, thanks again.
Sure.
303-806-8886. 303-806-8886. FleshLawFirm.com, FLESCH LawFirm.com. Be sure and check out our website, HaystackHelp.com. And our helpline is always there for you, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.